Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another Dracena Wines Podcast. Today, we are talking South Africa. I have to admit that South Africa does not come to the forefront of my mind when mentioning Cab Franc, but that is what was great about the Franc & Franc Symposium. We got to see so many expressions of our beloved grape. Once again, we are with Peter McCombie as he leads us through the wine regions of South Africa and the tastings of three Cabernet Francs. I hope you have enjoyed these past few weeks of Cabernet Franc. It is an incredible grape variety, and it is definitely much more than just a blending grape. Thanks for listening. And before we get to the podcast, I'd just like to wish everyone a very happy new year. May this upcoming year be a joyous and prosperous one and filled with exceptional wines. Sláinte!
And often we see wines from South Africa as somehow bridging the gap between the old world and the new world. Somehow they tend to work in maybe a more new world way in winemaking terms, but stylistically often the wines maybe seem a little bit closer to Europe. The wine industry in South Africa is all around the sort of lush, rugged landscape of the Western Cape. You can see there, that's only a small part of South Africa, but the wine industry is very much concentrated down towards the bottom. There are vineyards in the Orange River further north, where the landscape is dominated by the Kalahari Desert, but there are officially four broad wine regions. The coastal region, which is there in a kind of mauve colour, the Breed River, which is green, and the other two are in pink, and for some reason this map doesn't name them. The one on the right there, actually is named there, it's called Klein Karoo, and to the north there's another one called Oliphant's River. Bizarrely, you can see that brown area at the back, that's an area called Overberg, which has vineyards in it, but for some reason is not considered to be a wine region. If you can make sense of that, that's great. One of the key things about South Africa, and it's interesting hearing Jimena talking about the Humboldt Current in Chile, is you have a similar kind of thing going on in South Africa. The climate in theory is a Mediterranean climate. The 34th parallel runs through Cape Town. So in the Northern Hemisphere, this would put us, this latitude runs through the Mediterranean Sea, and in fact touches North Africa in Tunisia and Algeria. So you might expect plenty of heat. But you've got two ocean currents. You can see here the Agulhas, which is red, runs along the east coast of South Africa, and the Benguela, which is cold, and it's coloured blue here, and runs along the west coast. The first originates in the Indian Ocean, the second in the Atlantic. What happens is you get an upwelling of cold water from the depths of the Atlantic against the west coast of the continent. The currents don't actually meet as such, but there's a kind of interface zone, if you like, and what you get is quite a strong onshore wind effect, which has a cooling effect close to the coast. If you've ever been to Cape Town in the summer, the wind is extraordinary. They sometimes call it the Cape Doctor, and it blows and blows. It's quite extraordinary. The signature grape in South Africa is Pinotage, which is a crossing made in Stellenbosch some last century to try and find a way of making a wine that tasted like Pinot Noir, but that didn't get cooked in the heat of South Africa. They cross it in Sanso. For my money, it's made one of the ugliest grapes in the world. I find the tannins unpleasant, but there are plenty of people who disagree with me. Shiraz is quite widely planted, as is Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot, and typically we find blends. But white grapes are 55% of the 96,000 hectares planted, and of these, Chenin Blanc is the most planted grape. It's 18.5% of all plantings. It's becoming less popular now. It used to be used a lot to make fortified wine, which is less fashionable, but the South Africans are beginning to make some very good varieties of wines. They're usually dry but fruity, or fruity but dry, and they're also using it as the basis of some really quite interesting blends, which are very sort of textural rather than aromatic. Here we have another map which shows you some of the regions in more detail. And I guess just to pick out a few, you can see down the bottom there, there's a large red area. To the left of that, there's a blue area. That's Stellenbosch, where we're going to be quite focused. And then beneath that red area, you can see a little yellow spot called Walker Bay. And I'll come back to that in a moment. The appellation system in South Africa is called Wine of Origin. It started in 1972. And they are trying to acknowledge and protect diversity, similar, if you like, to a European appellation system. Going back a bit in history, vines were first planted in South Africa by Dutch settlers in the 1650s, although wine production did not really take off until the Huguenots arrived in France in the 1680s. The oldest estate in South Africa is Constantia, which is just on the other side of the Table Mountain from Cape Town. But in Stellenbosch, they've been growing grapes since 1690. So they've got, in New World terms, they've got quite a long history. They've had various setbacks over the years. In the 19th century, of course, they had phylloxera, as did many other people. It reduced vineyard area significantly. As happened in lots of other countries, in Europe as well, often the grapevines replanted were not the best ones, but they were high yielding. So in South Africa's case, there was a lot of sandstone. This led to overproduction and extremely low prices. So they set up a cooperative, which is known as the KWV. And throughout the 20th century, the KWV controlled all levels of production. And it's fair to say most people now would say they also stifled innovation. So even though there were some advances, in many ways it was not good for the industry. Of course, South Africa had another problem in the 20th century, and that was apartheid. There was a serious boycott of South African products. But not only were they unable to sell outside the country, people didn't go and travel, and people couldn't buy equipment. So I think in technological terms and in intellectual terms, it set the industry back quite significantly. Nelson Mandela was released in 1990, and after that, the South Africans came back. From 2016, they were the seventh largest producer of wine in the world in terms of volume. They represent about 4% of global output. One of the regions I want to focus on here is Stellenbosch. Now, that's a fairly detailed map. I guess the key points here I really want to point out is that Simonsberg Mountain in the north there, and I will point to it, and Simonsberg has given its name. Within Stellenbosch there are probably five or six distinct subzones, but Simonsberg, sometimes called hyphenated Simonsberg Stellenbosch, can actually make some pretty serious wine. And most of the top vineyards you'll find in the southwest, in this zone here. You've got vineyards all over Stellenbosch, and they're often they're in fairly gently rolling hills. You've got another mountain to the south called Helderberg, and there's quite a variation of styles. South Africa has some of the oldest soils in the world. In Stellenbosch in particular, you'll find a lot of granite and sandstone. There's a high clay content, which means they're free draining, and they also actually retain water. Generally speaking, winter rainfall is enough, although some of you will have noticed that this year they've had a huge drought problem in South Africa, and at one point it looked as if the city of Cape Town was going to run out of water. So that's also a huge problem for growers. They've now had some rainfall, but again, it's interesting how many times climate change has come up today, but that's potentially a big problem. So the climate is generally fairly hot and dry. I've mentioned this maritime influence that comes from False Bay in the south, and particularly in the afternoons, these southeasterly breezes come through and cool things down after a hot morning. Generally speaking, in Stellenbosch, you'll find white varieties closer to the ocean and red varieties further north. That's a picture of Simonsberg at dawn, taken by my friend Tim Atkin, who's a master wine and a very good photographer. Okay, so in South Africa, Cabernet Franc accounts for less than 1% of total South African vineyards. So that's kind of a recurring theme today. Almost everywhere we've looked at, we've found that Cabernet Sauvignon is important, but there isn't much of it in many places. There's now about 1,000 hectares In fact, in 2008, there were 1,000 hectares, but the figure dropped by 2016 down to 835, and almost all of it is in Stellenbosch and its neighbour on the other side of Simonsburg, Haal, which is a little bit warmer. However, despite the decline in vineyards, single variety bottlings of Cabernet Franc are increasing. There are now something, in 2005, there were 17 varieties of Cabernet Francs that were certified. 10 years later, there were 78. Last year, there were 147. The first single variety Cabernet Franc was produced by the pioneer Norma Ratcliffe at Warwick Estate in 1988. And Warwick continues to champion the variety. The most important wine guide is called Platter, and they get 5 stars on a regular basis, and we will actually taste one of their wines today. They've been so impressed with the success of Cabernet Franc that they're now replanting some vineyards with high density plantings, and they expect it to be their most planted variety. Another big name in South Africa, a guy called Bruno Ratz, who's many people think to be one of the best producers of Cabernet Franc. He says Cabernet Franc has the ability to give you 3 distinct sets of aromas on the nose: fruit, spice, and herbaceousness. On the palate, it has a linear structure with silky, soft tannins at the end. It maintains its minerality and freshness. Where Cabernet Sauvignon is a broadsword, Cabernet Franc is a scalpel that delivers its flavors with great precision. So they're all very excited about Cabernet Franc in South Africa, so I thought that now's a good time, I think, to taste. So we're going to start with, I think you've got some wine in your glass?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, we're going to start with the Warwick Estate. That's the picture. Pretty amazing looking vineyard. In Stellenbosch, the estate itself goes back to 1771. It had a Dutch name originally, but after the Boer War in 1902, an English officer from the Warwickshire Regiment decided to bought the farm and named it Warwick as a tribute to his regiment. The Ratcliffes, Norma and Stan, bought it in 1964 and planted mostly Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc. Now the twist to Cabernet Franc. Last year it was acquired by some investors who have bought neighbouring estates and are expanding production. They're very keen to continue to express the best terroir of Simonsburg in Stellenbosch. In the Simonsburg-Stellenbosch zone where they are, what you have soils that are characterised by yellow-brown to reddish-brown, deeply weathered soils. They've got good drainage water holding, typically somewhere between 150 and 400 metres. Annual rainfall is about 750 millimetres. Generally speaking, it tends to face southwest, which is, if you remember, you're on the other side of the world, so that tends to be cooler. In fact, it's better to be facing south or southwest here than north, because it wouldn't be too hot. And it is mostly red wine. Rows are planted at a density of 3,100 vines per hectare, following contours. In the vineyard, there's large decomposed granite rocks are set in deep clay soils. They do have drip irrigation, but they tend to use only after harvest or during exceptionally high hop vintages. This wine, 2004, was a cold, wet winter. Initial growth was slow, bud break was late. They had a fairly even flowering and berry set. And the vintage started 2 weeks later than normal, and they harvested on the 10th of March. Grapes are hand harvested and go into lug boxes, where they're first thing in the morning. The bunches are destemmed, berries are hand sorted. They get a cold soak for 5 days before fermentation. Then there's a 10-day ferment with a post-ferment maceration of 14 days. They get transferred to new stainless steel tanks for maleductive fermentation before barrel aging in small French barrels for 22 months, 40% new. Why are you tasting it? I've got a quote here. This wine is bought by a retailer in the UK called the Wine Society, which is a club, a members club. And they are highly rated, and one of the things they do is they offer the descriptions of the wine on the website, but they also encourage, as a lot of people do these days, people to put feedback. And there's a member review here of this wine, which I think is really interesting. And it says, "My feelings are ambivalent about this wine. On the one hand, it's very well made, polished, complete, rich, full-flavoured mouthful. However, my liking of Cabernet Franc wine comes from the fragrant raspberry aromas, the herbaceous underripe taste, and the edgy tannins, none of which this had. Mind you, Cabernet Franc's home in the Loire can throw up pretty raw, unpolished examples. And this was way more enjoyable than those. So he said, this did exhibit the difference between New World warmer climate style and the Old World style. So I think that's quite an interesting summation of that wine, if you like. For me, this wine, obviously it's the oldest of the three wines from South Africa, but you're beginning to see some evolved aromas. It struck me as being more Bordeaux-like than Loire, but maybe with that little bit of extra ripeness. Quite firm tannins. There was a herbal note, but rather fresh herbs. For me, it was more like slightly dried herbs. Okay, on to our second wine. And this wine is called Glenelly, Glass Collection Cabernet Franc. And it's a project of Mayor Alain de Longuesson, who used to be the owner of Chateau Pichon-Alon. And she invested in South Africa because she absolutely saw the potential. Winemaker there is a guy called Luke O'Cunningham, and he follows a minimal approach to winemaking. There's intensive sorting. In this particular case, in 2015, they had a great year, although it was fast, in other words, early. Bud rate was early. They had warm days and cool nights in December, which brought the harvest forward. There were low pH levels and good acids at the harvest, so they were very happy. Grapes were lightly crushed and went straight into stainless steel tanks. Fermentation was done with natural yeast, with a mixture of rack and return and open pumpovers. Post-fermentation skin contact for 2 or 3 weeks, and then gentle pressing. Malolactic fermentation in French oak barrels wrapped every 3 months, and it was given 12 months in oak. The numbers, 14.5% alcohol, pH of 3.51, total acidity 5.6, and 2.2 grams of residual sugar. And as usual, this wine has various awards as well. Here's some vineyard work. I guess these two pictures really just show you it's relatively flat, this vineyard. There's a little hint of a slope there. So our last wine is called Gabriel's Kloof. This comes from Walker Bay. So that was that little orange dot right on the southern coast. Walker Bay is part of this area called Overberg, which isn't for some reason officially recognised as a wine zone. The wines are made by a young guy called Peter Allen Finlayson, who makes wines on his own account, but his father-in-law bought this farm. And he is a fantastic winemaker. But this gives you a sense of the vineyard. You can see the mountains, but the sea's behind you. So there is a cool effect. And this is some of the sandstone and that you have in the vineyard. Pretty big stones. In terms of styles, I thought this was obviously the youngest wine. It's quite bright and youthful, quite fruity. Maybe a little more evident oak than the previous two, but for me, the oak was really soaked up by the quality of the fruit. There was really quite dense, concentrated fruit. What English people would call brambly flavours, and I suppose that's sort of a sense of forest fruit, so berries, I guess, maybe some leafiness. It's quite sternly structured, but plenty of fruit, I think, really rather good wine. So, three very different wines, I think, from South Africa, reflecting some different climates there. For me, I think what's been interesting about this session, actually, can I ask, did one of these countries or maybe one of these wines surprise you? Did you see something that maybe you didn't expect?
For me, it's the last one, which if it would be the blind test, I would say this is a Cabernet Franc from the Mediterranean side of the river. And I think in taste, that was the closest to Eli. So it's a very ripe fruitiness with nice acidity and tannin. It was very spicy, very dense fruitiness, which is, I think, a lot of Villaine Franc flavors has a similar flavors and similar structure. So for me, I think the South African one, and especially the last one, was the closest to Villaine. But I think all the three different regions and countries has their own unique taste, and it was very, very interesting. For me, the California wines, it was beautifully made, and I think the first and the second, with the acidity and the tannin, the very well with the integrated tannin, it was very, very elegant, and I was expecting something bigger and more powerful, and it was a good surprise for me.
Thank you.
About the Chilean wines, it's the first and the second ones, again, it was, in a good way, a very restrained. It's very elegant. And
do you mind if I add to that? I was really impressed with the Chilean wines because Chile has a reputation for being very reliable. And in fact, my friend Tobacco, I mentioned earlier, famously wrote an article about Chile, and he said that drinking Chilean wine is like driving a Volvo. And the Chileans were so upset. But Anna would agree that at one time that was true. And what I think is really interesting is that you're seeing now people taking more risks, people trying things. But you still have some very, very big companies in Chile who are very good at what they do at making well-made wines in large volumes that sell at a very good price. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's really interesting to see, and what I think you brought three wines and really showed this, the diversity that now exists in Chile. And I noticed in my own notes when I was tasting, quite often you can spot a Chilean wine because it's so fruity. But actually, particularly the first two were actually, as you said, that's what I mean, think of this, they were quite elegant and quite restrained. And there was, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but there was a bit of a European sensibility about them, and I thought that was really, really interesting. I thought they were really delicious wines.
No, it's. I think that was also, for me, it was a very interesting tasting because it was much more elegant wine than I was expecting, okay? And I was expecting something from this tasting that this wine is going to be the closest to Villaine Franc style. And I think I'm not disappointed at all. So this is our fourth conference. With totally different kind of style, from Loire to Northern Italy to the Balkan countries. And I think for me, that was the conference which shows the similarity within the variety. So it didn't show that it's totally different style and it's unrecognizable variety. I felt that this is the same grape variety, sometimes in a different aspect or different thoughts. But same message. Concentrate on the Cabernet Franc, and which is all this conference is the meaning why we are here to concentrate this variety.
But it was interesting for me listening to what Laurie had to say about social media, and I wrote down, what are you doing to promote your Cabernet Franc, you know, in your market? And I don't just mean in Hungary, because I think Villaine has a relatively comfortable place in the Hungarian market, but I think outside of Hungary, Villaine does not have a comfortable place. Not many people know who you are, where you are, and I think this connection with Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Franc is Villaine, Villaine is Cabernet Franc, is potentially quite a good thing. It doesn't mean you have to exclude other varieties, but it is something different. And clearly, I think the point about the price of Cabernet Franc in California versus Cabernet Sauvignon, clearly it's a variety that has a certain prestige. And it may be relatively niche, I think it still is, but I think it's not necessarily a bad thing to try and exploit the niche, maybe grow the niche, but I think it's a good place to target efforts. I think the brand Cabernet Franc potentially could be very valuable.
I think the best word what you use is prestige. because in terms of wine, wine producers try to focus on the prestige. And if the Cabernet Franc equal with the prestige, that I think they find the variety which can represent the region and the producers as well.
I think the other thing, and it's, I guess it's why you have outsiders coming here to tell you things that maybe you don't always want to hear. But I think it's important that you know what else is out there. I think it's important that producers of Cabernet Franc and Vilain taste Cabernet Franc from other places. And obviously that's what you're doing here, which is very good. But because you have a strong reputation within Hungary, I think maybe sometimes people can think, well, that's pretty good, and the rest of the world should sit up and pay notice. But the rest of the world has a lot of other people telling them to pay attention. And I think you need to be confident that what you're doing is good. And you are confident, I know that, but you need to see what the competition is. More, it's great to do this, but you need to do it more and more.
I'm absolutely right. So it's the Vilain is the most well-known red region in Hungary. But they have difficulties with the international market because Vilain is not a big region, so even if Hungary is not a big wine-producing country. But Vilain is a small region and is in advance because they find a variety which can show to the international market, Cabernet Franc. This can be a brand, a flagship wine, which is a future for them. It's much easier to recognize the region through the grape variety than the region which produced Cabernet Sauvignon Merlot, Cabernet Franc, and many others. So if they pick the right grape, we really, really believe that the Cabernet Franc the right choice. And you are absolutely right. We have to convince the foreign market that the Vilain Franc at least as good than Chilean or Californian, more well known international competitors or yeah.
I think for me the challenge is to Vilain is to keep up the good work. Don't be complacent and get out there in the market because people need to see you.
This is very incorrigible.
Can I say on behalf of the foreigners, the guests, it's been a pleasure. It's been really enjoyable. The hospitality has been fantastic and I think the wines have been really great.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. It was perfect.
Did you know that Dracena Wines now has a wine club? We named it the Chalk Club. Draco is on our label, but Vegas was getting a little jealous, so we decided he deserved to be our club spokesdog. In Las Vegas, betting chalk means that you are betting on all of the favorites. We are betting that we are one of your favorite wineries, so we thought the name was apropos. The club is simple, yet a bit different than most. When you wager on us, we will ship you 3 bottles of wine twice a year, once in April and once in September. You can choose all red or mix of red and rosé. You immediately receive 15% off of all your wine purchases throughout the year, but what makes our club stand out is the progressive discount. Let your club membership ride into the next year, your discount increases. Each year you parlay your membership, you receive an additional 5% off up to a planned maximum of 25%. Your club shipments are discounted to a flat $15, plus we'll cover your club shipping cost for your second shipment. That's $15 house money in a sure bet for you. So please head to our website, DracenaWines.com, and find out all of the benefits of joining the Chalk Club and how to sign up. We've stacked the odds so that you can get our award-winning wines without breaking the bank. Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions on what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, Facebook, Snapchat, Google, and Periscope as @DracenaWines. I am also on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd, or email us at DracenaWines.com. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast catcher to help others find us more easily. We are found on all of your favorite aggregators. To subscribe easily to iTunes, go to bit.ly/Dracena Podcast. That's bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. And that's a capital D for Dracena and capital P for podcast. Please check out our award-winning wines and find out about our wine club at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Sláinte!